What's up, punks? This is a special edition of Block Digest with guests Nicholas Gregory and Tom Trevithan. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Commerce Block. So how are you guys doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, good. Cheers.
So today we're probably going to be doing a lot of talking about tokens, securities, you know, all those things Bitcoin maximalists love to talk about. So, you know, to kind of start, you guys have the Ocean platform, which is based on Elements. Do you guys want to kind of go into a little bit about, you know, what you're kind of trying to do there and maybe some of the high level design choices you guys made versus something like Liquid?
Yeah, I guess when we started, we've been kind of working on the sidechain space for a while. Liquid wasn't really live or available. It was just Elements. So we started looking at we had basically a client who wanted to do some sort of tokenized gold. And we had experience using pay to contract because we were the authors of Bit175. And this was around 2017, I think. And really the only options at the time were using something like, who are you looking at? The Tether option, the kind of omni-layer stuff. And yeah, we kind of looked at Elements at the time, but that was kind of very raw. So we basically had to fork it to introduce a lot of the kind of the KYC requirements and kind of like the stuff we had to do around securing it against the Bitcoin blockchain. And that's where kind of Mainstay came about. And that was kind of like an attempt to build a single sealed set, which had been discussed many times by Peter Todd.
Yeah, so I mean the model was that we chose Elements. We wanted to use the robustness of like the Bitcoin UTXO architecture, and we were required. I mean, a client we had wanted to launch this gold token, and they had a requirement for like a KYC layer. So we did quite a lot of work adding that into the Elements, and we kind of had to fork Elements. I mean, some substantial changes, mainly at the kind of policy layer. So this was the history of us kind of using Elements. Good to kind of go in about a bit about our kind of model and the way that we go about things, which is different from, say, Liquid. So Liquid is a sidechain. We don't have a sidechain. This is not our kind of model. We basically have a model that each asset and each issuer who wants to issue a token has their own blockchain, which is obviously completely centralized, is permissioned so that they can add in all kind of, you know, any kind of policy restriction, any kind of KYC that they need to. But these are permissioned but public asset-backed blockchains. But the immutability is guaranteed by Bitcoin. So we have this Mainstay protocol where we can basically use Bitcoin's immutability. So it's a very different kind of model than Liquid. So Liquid is trying to be, well, aside from its like role as a real Bitcoin sidechain for moving Bitcoin around in a lower fee kind of more private environment, Liquid for like issued assets is trying to be a single platform that everyone can just issue their assets on. So our model is a bit different, that we have individual chains for individual asset issuers. And so they can maintain control and ownership of that. That's, I guess, a bit of a quick summary. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I think there's a couple things in there I kind of wanted to touch on, but I think mainstay would probably be what makes the most sense. I think that's kind of like the biggest differentiator in terms of the consensus layer. So did you kind of want to break through or break down, I mean, like how mainstay works and kind of how the architecture is set up to guarantee that you can find like a single canonical state for things?
Okay. So the basic idea of mainstay is that you exploit the uniqueness of a Bitcoin UTXO. This is like Peter Todd's single-use seal idea. So essentially, you're using the fact that there's only a UTXO in Bitcoin is completely unique. The transaction ID is completely unique, and therefore a sequence of transactions or a chain of transactions in Bitcoin is also completely unique, and you can prove that there's only a single history of a given sequence of transactions. So it's essentially it's exploiting that property by committing a separate chain, so it's a separate blockchain or a separate sidechain, and committing the history of that separate blockchain into this sequence of transactions on Bitcoin. And then by verifying the Bitcoin blockchain and verifying the uniqueness of this sequence of transactions, you can also verify that the history of this sidechain or separate blockchain is also unique. It's kind of, there is a second step that you also need to prove that there's only a single history, because this is a bit different from just like timestamping. So if you think about it, you could timestamp anything into Bitcoin, but that doesn't guarantee uniqueness. Doesn't guarantee yeah. there's a single history, because you could timestamp two alternative sequence of states into Bitcoin.
It's a data withholding attack. Like I could keep my parallel history secret and then just drop it out there later and confuse everything.
Yeah, or just give one history to one set of people, another history to another set of people, and double spend. So this preserving this uniqueness was the main aim of this. And so in order to do that, to ensure that there is only a single history possible, you also have an additional rule that you have to commit this Bitcoin UTXO into the sidechain. So essentially, you start off with a single transaction in Bitcoin. You commit that transaction ID into the kind of genesis block of your sidechain, and then you propagate this chain of transactions on Bitcoin. Every time you create a new transaction, you commit the state of the sidechain into that transaction, and you continue going on this. And then you can independently verify that there's only a single history is possible for the sidechain. This is kind of highly, it has to be centralized. You have to have someone has to be controlling the keys to these outputs on Bitcoin. You basically are trusting someone to perform the commitment to keep going. But once the commitment is done, you can kind of, with a level of trustlessness, you can verify that there is only a single history. So it's kind of permissioned, essentially. But then again, this sidechain is permissioned as well. So you have a centralized entity, which is signing blocks on the sidechain. And this entity could also be responsible for propagating this sequence of transactions on Bitcoin. So we added a few things to try and improve this. So you can have some kind of multi-sig for the Bitcoin transaction chain. So you could, if you've got like a federated sidechain, you can have the same rules, the same permissions propagating this chain of transactions on Bitcoin. We also use a pay-to-contract, which saves a bit on transaction fees.
Yeah, do you actually want to explain that for people who might not know what that is? I'm not sure that's like one of the most widely known BIPs.
Yeah, so most people, when they want to commit data into Bitcoin for timestamping or whatever. They use op return. So an op return is a provably prunable output. So you can add a special output where you can commit data to that isn't included in the UTXO set. Though there is some contention about op returns. There's been the size of the op return allowed has changed over time. And some people aren't in favor of having op returns because they think it encourages people to abuse Bitcoin in the way we're doing. And also it makes transactions larger. So there's an alternative in that you can actually commit to data which is kind of embedded in the actual address that you use to pay an output to. So an easy way to explain this, I guess, is that you can modify the public key that you pay to in a particular way that you can later prove that a particular cryptographic commitment was added to that public key. So
tweaking with
Schnorr. Yeah, you're tweaking is the word, you know. So you kind of tweak, you have a public key that you're going to pay to, you tweak the public key, you then hash it to an address, you pay to that address, and then you can independently prove that you made that commitment. You can reveal the commitment at a later stage. So this, it's a bit more efficient than op return.
And the miner burns
it. Here's a good point, I think, for me to play devil's advocate a little bit. So, like, the one of the only issues that I kind of took when I first saw this whole platform, and, you know, the other one I'll get into in a second was based on a misconception on my part. But this one is when it comes to the using the pay to contract to commit to a sidechain using Mainstay, I think that pay to contract is a very good efficiency gain. You know, like you said, a lot of people aren't fond of, you know, op returns eating up more block space than they need to. But I don't really see how it kind of improves the censorship resistance of these Mainstay commitments, because the way that Mainstay is structured, it requires there only be a single output in these commitment transactions. So you can only ever add extra inputs that condense down to the single output in each Mainstay transaction. And that's a very, like, abnormal pattern in transactions that kind of stands out. So I think it's a big win in terms of the efficiency of chain space, but I don't really see how it kind of adds to any kind of meaningful censorship resistance, you know?
Yeah, when we added that phrase, I think in our paper, that's probably where you read it. I think what we were getting at is the fact that, I mean, we don't know what the future holds for Bitcoin, and there's been lots of contentious things in the past. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that there is some potential movement in the future, maybe to change the policy rules in Bitcoin. The IS standard rules, I think, to change the size of the op return that was allowed, which happened quite a few years ago. So although I don't think it's on the cards, but I think that it's not beyond the realms of possibility that there could be some kind of movement within Bitcoin, maybe to, say eliminate op return from the kind of his standard transaction rules, for example.
Okay, so you're not talking like selective minership or miner.
Not selective censorship, but it basically by hiding your commitments, I think you're removing the possibility that at some point in the future, I don't think miners would selectively censor kind of op return transactions, but I think it's possible that in the future there might be some campaign or movement which would actually change the policy rules on op return.
Okay, so you're just worried about long-term consensus or protocol changes and kind of future-proofing against that.
Yes, I think so. I think so. It kind of makes it a bit more robust in the long term. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then, you know, the other kind of criticism I brought up last time, again, you know, this was a misconception on my part, is I did not like the idea of mainstays with the assumption I had that each chain would effectively have its own independent mainstay anchor in the main chain. But talking to Nick here a little bit, you guys are actually aggregating all the member chains under this platform into a single mainstay commitment.
Yes, that's our kind of service, and that's what we want to kind of make money from this kind of long term. Obviously, it's anybody's free. If they want to maintain control over this, then they would have to do it themselves. But obviously, doing it themselves is not the most efficient way. Also, partly the reason we decided to aggregate these and run a service was some of our clients actually don't want to touch Bitcoin. And so they want to, and they don't want to be exposed to the risk of transaction fee kind of volatility. So it was kind of natural for us to think about running this for them. So we're kind of controlling the keys to this mainstay chain, and then we can basically aggregate commitments. I guess I explain a bit why this is slightly different from, say, like open timestamps, in that this only works, you only maintain the guarantee of a single history, that same kind of guarantee of immutability, if the commitment from any particular sidechain goes into the same position in this Merkle tree when you compress it to do a single commitment. So essentially our model is that we run this service. We call them slots, and people can pay like a small monthly fee to access this slot. And that when they're basically sending commitments to this slot, that they have exclusive kind of access to the commitments they add to this slot. And so by maintaining the sequence of commitments in that slot, that they then maintain that kind of guarantee of a single history and of immutability. So this is our plan, that we can run this as a service, and obviously we try and run it as best we can. So we've taken lots of care over the robustness of the transaction signing. So we have like a 2 of 3 multi-sig output on Bitcoin. All the keys are generated within hardware security modules in Switzerland. And so we, you know, because obviously it's a trust but verify model. So if people are going to use this, they have to trust us to, if these keys get lost or stolen, then you're going to lose that. You're going to lose that guarantee of proving a single history. Essentially, any sidechain would have to hard fork if we lost those keys.
Yeah, but that's not the end of the world. I mean, you know, it's like really when I first saw this platform, it was kind of just my initial read. You know, based on incomplete information, that this was going to be kind of another thing spamming the Bitcoin chain.
Okay.
But, you know, looking at what you guys are doing, it's you're really taking, I think, the effort to be efficient with that. And it's I have no problem with this kind of stuff, as long as there's that striving to be efficient in order to not pollute the commons. You know
what I mean? Yeah. Of course. Well, obviously, it's economically incentivized to be as efficient as possible. I think, you know, I guess that you must be quite aware of Veriblock and their model, which is a bit different.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily. I don't think it's going to work. I think our model is much more efficient. The big problem with Veriblock, and they're essentially trying to do the same thing, and in a way it has advantages, because their model is at least on paper it's permissionless and it's decentralized. That's why it's so inefficient, I think, with their mechanism. But if you're going to use the Veriblock service, you essentially have to then do full verification of 3 blockchains. You have to verify whichever blockchain is being secured by Veriblock. You have to verify the Veriblock blockchain, and then you have to verify the Bitcoin blockchain to get that proof of immutability. Which again is very inefficient. Whereas with our approach, you just verify the sidechain blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain, and then a single Merkle proof. So,
you know, I think you just gave me the perfect into like the last kind of thing I wanted to get into on Mainstay. I didn't really know how to transition though. Here's the reason why I don't like Veriblock, but I don't have any issues with Mainstay after really getting to understand it. And that's the incentives. Like one of my big concerns about this kind of attaching things to the Bitcoin network is you are creating an incentive now to reorganize the Bitcoin chain. Like you are attaching more value dependent on that proof of work for its current state as an incentive to, well, if you reorganize this, you can manipulate this value too. And the reason I don't like Veriblock is because the Veriblock system is attaching public chains, things that can themselves be reorged or double spent. Whereas with Mainstay, you're working with federated environments. So even if like that type of reorganization was to happen, one, you don't have access to the federation keys to actually do anything on whatever sidechain unless you are the operator. And two, these are ultimately still trust-based assets that in the event of a reorganization like that, everybody can kind of just sit there and go, we're going to ignore this and go with the state that was previously good. So you kind of have a sort of safety cushion from yeah. that type of incentive distortion.
I think it's kind of like we'd like to think of it as it's all about it. This is something you can put on top of what is a completely trusted system. So, you know, you can say a blockchain where the issuer basically controls the block production isn't very useful as a blockchain because obviously they can rewrite it at will. But essentially when you're, yeah, I guess, I don't know if we, yeah, we'll move on to talking about security tokens and whether you trust someone, you know, for example, this gold token, you know, you trust someone who has the gold in the vault and you're trusting that they're going to give the gold back to you when you go to redeem it. And if they're just running their own blockchain, they can rewrite that blockchain at will. But you do have some, they're producing the blocks, and so you're trusting them to do that. So this Mainstay essentially is just layered on top of that. So it gives you, as a token holder, it gives you an additional, an additional verification that the operator of this blockchain, this asset-backed blockchain, has not rewritten history. So you have some independence, you have some independent proof that your ownership is unique.
Yeah, something that you can take to a courtroom or some kind of arbitration that doesn't have subjectivity to it.
Exactly, yeah. So you're kind of, you are exploiting or borrowing Bitcoin's, you know, globally objective state. But this is layered on top of an already should be quite secure, set up with federated block signing.
Mm-hmm. And there's actually one more thing I kind of wanted to talk about before we move on to just security tokens in general. Your chain cert program. This is actually something I just read about over the last week or so. And I actually think this is a pretty interesting way to kind of bring people into this web of trust you have to interact with. So would you want to kind of break down, how chain cert works and kind of the whole reasoning behind this to go along with the whole platform?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a white paper. I mean, we have a rough implementation, but I guess when we were working with this, different digital assets, we started to realize we're going to have an issue down the line where people are not necessarily going to know which asset they have. And, you know, we've already seen this with various versions of Bitcoin. And when you're talking about digital assets, we thought that this problem could become a lot worse. So it was a way of basically creating a digital certificate on the attesting it to the Bitcoin blockchain, but using that as a way of validating the kind of the digital asset which people actually have.
So, yeah, I guess it's like it's trying to... when you go and buy something, I guess, buy an asset, you obviously have to, there's several ways that you know that you know what you're getting. Obviously, if it's Bitcoin, you need to make sure, firstly, you've got the Bitcoin software, you've got an authentic wallet, which is, and then you've got, you know, you know what the genesis block of Bitcoin should be. Well, you think you do, because it's social consensus what the genesis block is and where you download your software from. But we wanted to, but obviously for kind of asset-backed sidechains, that you don't have that. You have to get the information on, you know, what is the correct version of this chain, and do you actually own that asset or not? And obviously you can do that kind of manually by checking, you know, hashes of genesis blocks and all this kind of stuff. But we wanted to automate this and be able to, for wallets, for example, to be able to authenticate directly that they're connected to the correct asset, and that this links to, you know, PKI and certificates corresponding to websites of asset issuers and things like this. So I think it's definitely going to be needed as these things proliferate, I think.
Yeah, so kind of like the TLS authority for the side chains. Like, as long as you have this one root key you can verify from, you can prove this chain is legitimate, this wallet to go with it is legitimate, and all these other tools in the kit you're going to need.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually, I was really, it was a pleasant surprise to see this kind of thinking, because I think this is going to even start to become an issue with Bitcoin itself in the long term. Maybe not issues like the Genesis block, but there's definitely going to be these kinds of supply chain issues that mm-hmm. we're going to have to deal with.
Hmm. Yeah.
All right. So I guess, let's kind of jump into the whole security token scene.
Before we start, the Gold Project actually isn't a security token. We're just a technical providers here. It's actually an idea that was from MKS PAMP, which was one of the larger gold companies in Europe, based in Switzerland, and CoinShares. And this is like a joint venture. But one of the key things is that this wasn't a security. It's actually a payment token regulated under the Swiss authorities. And so I just want to make it clear that's not a security, this gold. It's actually an actual, the token itself is actually redeemable for physical gold, which is held in a vault in Switzerland.
Okay, well, I mean, these kinds of platforms are going to definitely be useful beyond just securities.
But we ended up doing a lot of work making this not a security, which is interesting in itself.
Okay, let's say the token space then.
Yeah.
Like, how do you guys see, this whole kind of space evolving? Because it's something a lot of Bitcoiners kind of just shit on, the whole idea of a token or an equity token or whatever it is, because just use a database. But I think that's kind of short-sighted in terms of just the efficiency and the uptime and the interoperability of things. I think that there are some benefits there, even though you aren't really removing any trust here.
Well, there's a couple of ways. First of all, we're in the business of building sidechains. So funny enough, after we spoke last week, people are coming to us and thinking, could you have a more of a Bitcoin sidechain that could be potentially combined with something like Wasabi or Samurai, so that you mix confidential transactions with some sort of coin join. And that's something that we're starting to look at. Obviously, there's challenges in building that legally. But so, our business model really isn't just tokenization. It's actually building sidechains and the infrastructure around it. In terms of commodities, of course, we've worked mainly with gold. And we've had some preliminary experiments with building kind of asset-backed securities. I guess some of the challenges, the regulations don't necessarily meet what you can do, because a lot of these securities can only be traded during certain hours. And by putting these on blockchains, you essentially can trade these things 24/7. And, I come from, I'm from a software engineering background, but I did work in the finance industry. You do have issues when you're trying to trade something 24/7. Do you have the amount of shares that you believe you have? And having a blockchain backed by Bitcoin kind of answers a lot of these challenges. But the regulations there don't necessarily meet what you can do with a blockchain. That's what we're seeing.
So if you want to add to that. I think we want to obviously at the moment, you know, it's kind of early stages and you have to work within the real world. But I think, you know, our view is that, you know, that token ownership, as the way I see it, a token is different from just a database entry. Is it's about independent verification of ownership. And that independent verification of ownership enables you to transfer that ownership very easily with a very easy operation, and it should enhance the way that people are able to trade with each other. If they don't have to go through this, you know, trusted third party. Obviously, the issuer of a token, which is backed by a commodity or backed by equity or something, has to be trusted to basically return that ownership to you. Or to redeem the token. But by everybody being able to own or independently verify their ownership is quite a powerful thing. And it can basically enable kind of peer-to-peer trade of these ownership of these assets. And it's fundamentally, I think, more valuable than just having your ownership recorded in someone else's database. But to have your ownership, being able to independently verify and prove your ownership to anybody else, I think is quite a useful property. Probably not as revolutionary as Bitcoin itself, but you know, we believe that this is useful technology to exploit and to make all kind of you know, ownership and being able to transact ownership kind of much more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think people really underestimate the kind of inefficiencies you get when you have a half dozen intermediaries you have to go through using different databases, like different communication systems that all have to reconcile this before something is considered finalized, as opposed to they're just running a blockchain node and they see updates. They don't have to be proactively involved in it.
Yeah, and if you look at the gold project, it essentially makes the token look like a bearer asset, even though the gold is ultimately in the vault. But it's ultimately, it legally looks and feels like a bearer asset. Whereas if you have gold ETF, I don't know, are there 20, 30 databases between you and the gold? And do you actually have ownership, or is it just a series of kind of promises and wishes and contracts, which is, you know, what you see when you start looking at this space?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, it's compressing a lot of the middle layers of ownership. So if you can see direct, so with what we did for this gold project, you know, you have a wallet with a token in it. You own the private key to that token. You can independently verify via digital signatures from the vault operators, the individual gold bar you own. You can see how many gold bars everyone owns, and you can also verify that your ownership is unique against Bitcoin. So this is kind of, yeah, this is enhanced ownership, essentially. It's stronger guarantees of ownership than just, you know, trusting some database behind a web form that you actually own something.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also offers just a lot of massive potential in the derivatives project. I mean, like the work Blockstream is doing on forward contracts or discrete log contracts on Liquid, like that type of stuff could be done with other assets as well. And you get the same benefit of the entire supply of whatever this derivative is based on is publicly auditable. You can see what's involved in derivatives, like all it. It adds so much more transparency to a useful financial tool that traditionally comes with massive downsides and rooms for manipulation.
Is that the digital garage stuff you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just like, there's so much massive room to open up, you know, not as much as Bitcoin is opening up financial access, but, you know, still to a large degree, opening up access to these markets. I mean, you know, if you have a sidechain platform that's not locked down, something like Liquid, like I could just go set up a derivatives contract with anybody willing for anything I want that's tokenized on that platform or denominated with Bitcoin. Like these types of platforms you know, they're very useful because the financial world is not just move money from A to B. There's a lot more to it that's built up over the years to really help people manage and shift risk around. And that's going to be just as important to bring, you know, to the 21st century as money.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, you know, this whole kind of like sidechain space is one thing I'm kind of looking at is the interoperability in the long term, you know, because you guys are building this ocean platform to pretty much let people spin up their own asset chains. Blockstream is kind of building this single liquid platform to host a number of assets and chains. Like, where do you guys see like kind of collaboration and like building towards interoperability going forward?
Well, I think when Blockstream guys, obviously, when they started the sidechains, they made Elements a separate open source project. So I don't think they ever wanted, I mean, they've been quite open with us. They were hoping that more other people would contribute. And that hasn't worked out for various reasons. And yeah, we're kind of like a fork. We're probably maybe a year behind on them. But yeah, we've spoken to Blockstream in the last couple of months. You know, we met Adam back at various conferences, and we're going to try and catch up to where they are. And you know, we're in talks to maybe just be part of Elements, so that we're not. But it's a lot of work to do.
It's quite complicated as well, because I mean, we but I got the opportunity to meet Adam like a few weeks ago at a conference, and there was a kind of desire from their side that I think they would prefer it if we actually just, you know, kind of merged back into Elements and just had a single Elements, which I think would be very nice if it was possible. But I think one of the problems is, I guess, is that when, if you're relying on an open source project, it's quite difficult to add in things that you need, you know, kind of quickly. I guess one of the good things about having your own fork is that you have got complete freedom to kind of add things whenever you want. I mean, I think that's the only concern we would have about going, adding everything back into Elements, is that you would kind of, you may not be able to get things done quickly, and there's lots of reviews, and for the right reason. Because I think
the side on us is to maybe make things modular, so maybe kind of like separate out the things we've made. And, you know, they're interested in some of the work we've done. Like we forked Electrum. So now we've got like an Electrum wallet that will work with Elements. But I think that's where we need to be.
Yeah. So I think we want to collaborate on basically all the interfaces and getting a kind of, we talked to them about.
And we have an Android wallet as well that works as well. Yeah, so we do want that to be more of a partnership in some way. But their model is very different. I mean, we don't see ourselves in competition. They sell to exchanges. They're more of a network. We don't run our own. We run sidechains for clients. It's a very different model. I don't see. There's room for collaboration that's been open about.
Yeah, and we try and push back everything we can back into Elements that are useful. There's quite a few things we've managed to contribute. Although a lot of our stuff is kind of what the most work we've done on is kind of KYC stuff, which I think Blockstream don't seem particularly interested in.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard finding people who can work on this code base as well. I think we're both in that same situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're kind of talking the, you know, pretty much the Bitcoin code base.
Yeah, exactly. In some ways worse.
But how about like on the application layer, you know, and ways you guys can collaborate there? Because like one thing that obviously jumps out at me is atomic swapping between Liquid and these chains, or potentially trying to make an easy system for people to peg these assets into Liquid to, you know, have atomic interactions on a single chain and that kind of like application layer stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really had those chats. I mean, we would like a way. I mean, I think if you're honest, Liquid was obviously designed as some sort of kind of like backbone between multiple exchanges. So obviously it would be in our interest to be able to feed our assets into Liquid so that we could reduce the amount of exchange work we could do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's been various challenges, mainly because of the exchanges on that side.
I think that's the issue. I mean, I think we've got the right kind of scaling in terms of issuing assets and tokens. I think our model is the right kind of architecture for scale. But I think the big problem that we're starting to encounter now is basically interoperability and integration. So, I mean, it's a big pushback from exchanges if they have to kind of add, if they have to integrate every single chain. I mean, one of the great successes of, you know, ERC-20 on Ethereum, I mean, it's a scaling nightmare, but it's the ease of use that an exchange can literally just is already running, you know, already plugged into Ethereum. So for them to list a new token, or like a new ERC-20 token, is just flicking a switch. And the same on Liquid as well, for them to add a new issued asset on Liquid. But for our model, it's more of a technical hurdle that they have to, you know, run a node for this separate asset. So this is, I think, where we need to focus a lot of our attention on is and maybe, yeah, working more closely with Liquid and getting assets pegged into Liquid would be kind of
A lot of people that we talk to don't want to use Liquid because of, you know, silly ideas that Tor is evil.
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues. Like, again, what?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have banned Tor in their environment, so that kind of creates challenges with Liquid.
Yeah, a lot of kind of corporate style people wanting to do things, and also like being able to. I mean, obviously, if you want to use Liquid, you have to have, you know, LBTC, which is fine for people like us, but I think some of our people we talk to,
yeah,
they want to keep the crypto kind of the actual cryptocurrency at arm's length, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely an issue to consider. But I mean, if you can find some kind of way around that, I mean, Liquid seems like they're the perfect way to deal with that kind of issue. Like just one chain that the exchanges are already integrating, and that's all they have to worry about.
No, I agree.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, and then we have people that want to use us as like more of a second layer solution, you know, to basically have a separate side chain, but to peg Bitcoin, but maybe have more privacy features. Because obviously we're on Elements, and yeah, you know, we support obviously confidential transactions. And there's been talks, would you have some sort of CoinJoin client, etc. Yeah, it's something we've done a lot of whiteboard session. How do you run that? In which jurisdiction? What's the image going to be of that? It's a lot of open questions there. But
yeah, see, that's a, you know, actually we can get into that before I push us into the Easter egg. that's a real interesting discussion, I think, is coin joins on a side chain, because you effectively create like a two-layer problem you have to deal with, where the actual peg in and peg out of the chain is its own independent anonymity set versus like whatever anonymity set you built up locally in the chain. And so if you move into the side chain and, you know, do your mixing and pull out, you destroy the anonymity set you built in that local environment and kind of reduce yourself to the peg in and peg out. So something like that really needs to kind of consider how they're handling both of those anonymity sets. Like, I think that the most ideal thing would be if we wind up having multiple federated side chains pegging Bitcoins in and out, they could cooperate and actually coin join their respective withdrawals, so that you could obscure even which side chain withdrawals being processed from.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting thought. Yeah. I think there's lots of quite interesting things you could do there.
Because it's like that especially is like another factor is the liquidity. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a side chain that's only got like 100 Bitcoin in it, and another side chain that has, you know, 10,000 in it, like those are not going to be able to mix really in a beneficial way, because, you know, anything under a certain threshold you can say could be either, but anything over is like, no, that's agent A. And yeah. So I think like that kind of thing is, you know, we're going to have to consider like tiers of liquidity when it comes to mixing, I think, in the long term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's lots of interesting. There's a lot of interesting stuff being done, you know, at the moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a wide open field.
Yeah.
All right, though. I guess, are you guys ready for some Easter egg fun?
Yeah, why not?
So, Tom, how was it like to work with the real Satoshi Nakamoto?
Well, I'd like to separate my experience at Enchain overall. And the thing is, within, you know, I you know, met a lot of nice people there and some smart people as well. And, you know, I had a good experience there. I was treated well. The certain person maybe is a different matter. I don't regret working for Enchain at all. I think at the time it was a great opportunity to basically, you know, get paid basically to not have to do much and just learn about Bitcoin all day. And I didn't really have to work with Craig, at least in the first kind of part of my employment. When I joined Enchain, it was like in 2016, just after the kind of famous public reveal. And actually, Craig wasn't really involved with the company much at all then. And basically, I joined a team of researchers, and basically all we had to do was like create ideas, and they were turned into patents, and no one really cared what we did. Yeah, it was great. But then after a year or so, they started to kind of double down on Craig, and he was brought back in a lot more. And that's when it started to get a bit crazier and crazier. Eventually it kind of, I left, and a lot of other people left. Like I said, I don't regret it at all. As for working with Craig, he's an interesting guy. Not a very nice man. But, you know, there were some crazy fun times. But I don't regret not working for him anymore. I'm pretty glad I don't work there anymore.
Yeah, well, what was that like doing research for them? Because, I mean, like, I've by no means comprehensively crawled through all the patents they've filed. But ones I have, it's like a lot of the things, it seemed like just blatantly attempting to patent prior art. Like some of the hierarchical key schemes that came out of that read to me like Enchain was pretty much just trying to patent Diffie-Hellman.
Yes. There's a lot of else. So there's a huge the kind of patent program. So they'd obviously promised investors like X number of patents, and obviously Craig had some stuff. The research team basically was allowed to work independently, so it could kind of do our own thing. A lot of it was just kind of nonsense, and you'd kind of lawyers would basically push things through, it's all a bit crazy. I mean, some stuff that might have been good, I think part of the frustration that we had was that you would never know. So you would, you know, you were basically asked to come up with ideas to patent things. So you'd write a white paper, you'd then kind of, it would be sent to the patent lawyers, and they would come back with a patent. But the frustration, I think, was that you weren't quite sure whether these were good ideas or not, because there's no real kind of peer review. I don't think a lot of what was pushed through, especially from a certain person, was a lot of rehashed stuff. And again, if you kind of pay patent lawyers enough, they can kind of rehash anything into anything else. I think to be honest, I think there's some things that we worked on while we were there that might have been interesting and valuable. But I guess it's just lost in a big pile of unknown, really. So yeah, I wouldn't waste too much time going through the whole of the output. But you never know; there might be some bits and pieces in there. Probably, unlikely from Mr. Right, but you
know. that was actually the next thing I wanted to ask. Like, is there anything you worked on there that you can talk about that you think might actually produce a useful kernel for something?
Well, there's. So, I mean, obviously, most of the things that I've worked on are now kind of published. But then again, it's kind of quite, it's mixed emotions, because things that I worked on that I kind of think might be useful and that I'm quite proud of, but then again, you're not quite sure if you want to publicize that, given that who owns the rights to the patent. Although I think a lot of these patents probably aren't very enforceable, just by their nature. but yeah, I mean, there's a few things. I mean, we actually, part of how I got involved with Commerce Block was through, you know, kind of contacts. But one of the things that I initially worked on at Enchain was we were working on trying to develop like two-way pegs, and two-way pegs between one of the ideas we came up with is a two-way peg between a proof of work chain and a proof of stake chain, using like threshold signatures. I think that was quite interesting. Another one was basically this kind of like what is now known as like state chains idea. That you can have this kind of off-chain transfer by essentially moving the ownership of a particular output without changing the key. And some other bits and pieces. I really got into, I mean, it was because we were given so much freedom, you could kind of go into what you want. So I spent a lot of my time really getting into kind of, privacy stuff, zero knowledge proofs, you know, really getting into understanding kind of how, you know, kind of ZK snarks work and stuff like this, and bulletproofs. And yeah, so it's to be honest, I think a lot of the stuff we came up with was probably, you know, not that kind of revolutionary, but I think there was the frustration. Yeah, was that you these are the kind of ideas that if you could, you know, engage with the community, you would find out quickly, you know, you'd get Greg Maxwell telling you this was bullshit. But you couldn't do that. So you had no idea, like, if these things were kind of good and valuable or not. I guess that's one of the frustrations. Also, the fact that it never really, it seemed like it was never going to go anywhere. So, you want to see, if you come up with an idea, you want to see something, you know, happen with it. Not just it be kind of filed away into this big pile of patents, which, you know, have questionable futures. So that was a big frustration, yeah. And that's why I wanted to kind of do something a bit more applied. I wanted to actually get involved with the dirty work of actually implementing something, getting something working, so you can actually, you know, see the result of something.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I think it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask if you had any funny stories involving Craig.
Probably once. I don't want to get in legal trouble. obviously having signed NDAs and things. I had Craig can be funny and entertaining. interesting incidents. I can't really go into it, I'm afraid. But yeah, I'll say that.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't regret kind of meeting him and knowing him, but I don't also regret not having to deal with him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how else to more diplomatically put that.
Well, I don't blame you for covering yourself, considering where you guys are based.
we're not desperate for the publicity of court action.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd rather be known for like other stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, I guess I'm pretty much all plumbed out of questions to ask. I mean, are there any last things you guys want to mention, or anything you want to put in front of people's eyes? Maybe they'll go dig and read a little deeper.
No, I mean, we're pretty open. Everything's on our site. I mean, our GitHub is pretty open. And thanks for having us. It's fun, really.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So we do. We love your show. Always watch or listen, rather. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah, not a problem. Hopefully we can get you guys back on next time you have some major development.
For sure.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right. Well, punks, I hope you all enjoyed this, and we will catch you all next time. Adios.
Bye.
Yes, bye. Was there
that sang it just on truth? Ain't your voice here yet? Is it? Yes, it is. Look, money out.